Smith.
All the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone. He's going to go into the band.
Biggs.
Have won.
He gets it out. He's going to have a big field.
Biggs.
Show. We're back after the weekend with Steve Mickelson live from Las Vegas, Nevada, and MixPicks.com. 2Ks and Mix, 2Ks and Picks, MixPicks.com. How you doing, Steve?
Doing great.
All right, we're going to get to lots of things, including your Vegas Golden Knights, the NBA playoffs, some baseball, if we have time, a little bit of NFL. Phone number is 888-989-9811. You can email us, RAD at radradio.com. This is a little bit of a different way to start. I don't plan on spending too much time on it, but science has kind of become like anything else these days. If they say something you agree with, you go, yeah, see, it's science. You have to believe that. So a new study has found that watching sports boosts our mental health and generally makes us happier human beings. Researchers scanned people's brains while they watched various sports and found it activated the, quote, reward circuits in their brain, which are linked to feelings of pleasure and happiness. And they also found that people who regularly watch a lot of sports, and who watches more than you, Steve, have more gray matter in those areas, which suggests it can change your brain structure over time. My question when I saw this was, well, first of all, the reaction was, well, yeah, of course. Of course sports makes us happier. It's better for our mental health. That's why we watch it. But then I thought, well, these reward circuits, were they really identifying positive pleasure and happiness when our teams were losing or our bets were losing? I find it hard to believe that if you're gambling on sports, which I don't know if they had that involved. But either way, we're emotionally invested in these teams or these players that we're showing feelings of pleasure or happiness. But maybe we are. Maybe complexing stuff in our brain that I don't understand, that even when we're watching something we're angry at, we're happy about it because we're watching sports. I don't know. How do you interpret all that?
I would have to believe the study did not include the sports wagering aspect of it, as they just took people at random and had them watch sports and went from there. I can speak for myself. I love, one of the reasons I love sports is just it lets me check out on a lot of different things. I don't think about what's going on at work, although my work is tied to it. But you know what I'm saying? It's just kind of, I can watch the game. I enjoy it. I root for my teams. And just relax. I'm not thinking about things I got to do in the yard or money issues or anything like that that's happening in the real world.
Which has been the big complaint, right, over the last decade or so as politics have found their way it's everywhere, into sports. And those of us that are just sports fans are screaming, stop. Or even, this one never really got to me, but I understood everybody getting angry or distracted by the Taylor Swift thing. Because it was kind of the same thing. It was like, will you stop? We feel like you're forcing it into us, et cetera. By the way, you said something there about it agreeing that they probably didn't take the sports betting thing into account. And for some reason, it just triggered something in my head that I don't think I've ever asked you. Your bona fides are you've been running sports books for decades. Have you ever had like somebody get really out of control angry in a sports book, like where you have to call security or whatever?
Well, yes. That's happened numerous times.
Numerous.
I can think back all the time. You know, I can think back to a really bad decision on a fight. You know, one of those, the fight outcome, everybody thinks what it is. And somebody fired a beer bottle at our Translex boards, smashed on the boards. My writers came running into the back office. We're under attack. They're throwing things at us, you know, and had to call security. You know, I wasn't present for this one. But one of my favorite stories is we used to have this really big gambler. And when I first started in the business, he was banned from the sports book. And I inquired why. And they said, because he took an ashtray, he threw it through the big screen TV.
God.
So he was only allowed to watch it up in his room. And so at this point, I knew who he was and he was up in his room. And he lost another big game. He pulled his gun out and shot out the TV screen. So thus, he then lost his rights to watch, you know, the games in the hotel room anymore. And I was informed, look, he can come in, he can make his bet, but he has to immediately leave the property. He cannot stick around or anything.
I do love the policy of initially, okay, you can't come, you can't watch the book. And then it's, you can't even be on the premises to watch the game, but we'll still take your money. I do love the workaround there.
And same guy. So years go by, he's mellowed out, and it's a summer day. And this is one of my favorite parts of the story on top of it. So he's in and he makes a huge bet. And it's like him and one other person. And he, the Cubs are playing the Reds. And he's sitting in the book. And there's this guy. And he is rooting for the Reds. And he is really loud. He's really vocal. So he walks over to the guy and says, hey, look, how much do you have on the game? I'll buy your ticket right now as a winner. Don't care what it is. I'll pay you as a winning ticket so you could just be quiet. The guy looks at him and says, I don't have any bets on the game. I'm just a fan. And he turned around, he walked up to me, told me how what just transpired, and just walked out of the book.
That's
and I just started laughing. That like, you know.
That's great. All right, let's get to actual sports. I honestly did not think that we would go back and revisit the Kentucky Derby because, you know, we did our best to talk about it on Friday. It still matters. Neither one of us are big horse people, and I don't know how much our audience is into it. It's hard to gauge these things, but we felt we had an obligation to spend a few minutes on it, so we did. But I thought, okay, good. We did our thing. If horse racing comes up again, it'll be Triple Crown talk or something like that. Well, the 150th Kentucky Derby finished as only the 10th Kentucky Derby decided by a nose, which is the closest margin in horse racing. It's the first time since 1996 the Derby has been that close. The crowd had to wait several minutes in the heat and humidity as the result was reviewed and declared official. Now, the favorite was Fierceness. Fierceness finished 15th in the field. But in the end, Sierra Leone and Forever Young, Sierra Leone, who was the second choice at 9-2 odds, Forever Young from Japan at 7-1 odds, they did not win. Mystic Dan at 18-1 won the Kentucky Derby. I bring this up for only one reason. To be obnoxious. Because while we were talking about the Kentucky Derby on Friday, Steve, you pointed out that unless you're like really, really, really into horse racing, your theory is pick a name that you like. And so after you gave that rundown of just pick a name that you like, have some fun with this, this is what happened on this show on Friday. Experts are not sure that Fierceness can bring the same speed to Churchill Down, so maybe you'd look at Sierra Leone if you were going to like get into this heady-wise. Otherwise, I'm looking at all the names and trying to figure out which name. I like Mystic Dan. That's a cute name. Hello? Hello? If you would have just went with me, you would have won the Kentucky Derby at 18-1 odds. Now, obviously, that like I literally used Steve's theory there. I said, all right, pick a name. That was the name that I saw. That said to me, that one jumps out, Mystic Dam. I don't claim any actual, you know, prescience over that. But Steve, how did this transpire within the books or whatever? Do you know like how like does this mean the books took a bath on this?
No, not at all. We're a pari-mutuel book, so we take a percentage of all the bets. It gets pooled with the racetrack at Churchill Downs, and then so all the money from everywhere just goes into one big pot, and they divide it up based on the amount of money that came into it. You know, they pull out certain fees here and there, but we make a percentage of every bet regardless of who wins or loses. The race was fantastic. I mean, they came out of the final turn, and I think it was seven horses wide at the lead. I don't recall a Derby race that had seven horses all vying for that first position. You saw the end of the race and you see the finish line and it's a pole that's, I don't know, 4 or 6 inches wide. And I'm sitting there going, okay, if you take it off the front of that pole, Mystic Dan wins this race, but because his head was coming back. But if you go by the backside of that pole, Sierra Leone wins the race because his head was going forward. So it all depended on where exactly that finish line was. It was a great race. And being there was no clear-cut favorite, there was no dominating horse in this race. The interest was there from everyone because everybody felt that her horse had a shot to win. And it proved that in the race. It was a fantastic race. I enjoyed every minute of it. And I'm glad that you called out the winner.
I enjoyed that, what they were alluding to in that article, that seemingly like endless, it felt like 10 minutes between the end of the race and them confirming who won, where they're panning the crowd and you're seeing people. Yeah, it was warm and it was humid, but they're sweating for other reasons. And in the end, a lot of people are saying it was a whisker. It wasn't a nose. It was a whisker that Mystic Dan won by. In terms of the sports betting, Steve, isn't this going to just be something we see now moving forward? Like stories like this, according to Churchill Downs, $210 million was wagered on the Derby. That's besting by $20 million the previous betting record set last year. Overall betting on the Derby on the day card soared to a record $320.5 million. Twin Spires, which is an online race book and official betting partner of the Derby, took a record $92 million. With sports betting become more prevalent and legalized in whatever it is, 38 states now, isn't it every year we're going to see these numbers continue to go up exponentially because Americans love to do this?
I think you will, and now that sports wagering is becoming more and more openly acceptable, you know, we're in 38 states right now. Horse racing is just going to fall over to it. It's going to become that much easier to make bets on races like the Kentucky Derby. And as I said, this and the Super Bowl were the two sporting events that you see people come out and say, this is what I bet on every year. I don't watch any of the horse races. This is it. I watch this one. This is the one bet I make a year. And I think that's just going to continue to grow.
Well, and I wonder, too, does that dovetail also to the fact that the Derby on Saturday drew 16.7 million viewers? That's the biggest audience for the race since 1989. It's not like there was nothing else to do this weekend. Sunday was Cinco de Mayo. You had a fight on Saturday night. NHL, NBA playoffs, plenty of baseball. I'm trying to figure out why a bunch of people, why a record number in 30-plus years watched the Derby other than people around the country had some sort of vested interest in it.
And the part that I find fascinating also is this was probably the worst Derby card because there was no standout horses. There was no horse coming in undefeated, or this horse and this horse have dominated. So it's between these horses. It was a wide open race that just, you know, any horse could win, and it still drew that viewership without that dominating, you know, Triple Crown hopeful horse.
I don't want to get too horse racy because I don't know anything I'm talking about, and I don't know how much you have an answer to this, but for Fierceness to be the favorite, you're right, wasn't a runaway favorite, no pun intended, but to finish 15th, that seems like nowhere near the odds it was given. Do you know what happened there? Have you read anything?
No, I haven't read anything of what really happened. And, you know, he was there going down the stretch. He just kept getting passed at the end because I want to say that, you know, he was in the top five or six coming out of that turn and just fell behind. You know, the owners have to be greatly disappointed because you tie all of this into the horse's money for breeding purposes. Mm-hmm. If you ran in the Kentucky Derby, you get this. If you have a great finish or win it, you're going to get this amount of dollars. Now, what he thought was going to be a potential winning Kentucky Derby horse finishing 15th, that breeding, you know, that stud fee just went down.
You know, it's amazing how often you read my mind, because while Steve and I exchange emails in the morning where we'll just kind of do an outline of the topics, we don't get into it like, this is exactly where I'm going to jump around story to story to story to story, because you mentioned the breeding, which is where the real money is. It's great to win the Derby. What was it? They got $3.1 million Mystic Dan got. The whole team did. Jockey gets 10%. Trainer gets 10%. The rest of it goes to the owners, et cetera. But the breeding, right? I mean, if you're breeding Mystic Dan, he won the Derby. And you can breed him over and over and over again. He can only race so much. So that's the answer to the question, as I understand it. Maybe I'm wrong. As to why there will be, as far as right now, there will be no Triple Crown winner. And we won't even get a rematch of the final three at the Derby because we're only 2 weeks away from the Preakness. And first of all, we know for sure Sierra Leone will not be at the Preakness, at least according to the trainer. Sierra Leone's not running. They're going to give him 5 weeks until the Belmont, which is the third leg of the Kentucky Derby, because they say it's the right thing to do to rest Sierra Leone. As for Mystic Dan, the owner said over the weekend that they've ran him back once in 2 weeks and it completely backfired. Mystic Dan didn't perform 2 weeks later, et cetera. They're already indicating they're not going to show up at the Preakness. At first, I'm reading this going, Jesus, this is like what we're doing with humans. We're just coddling these horses. Are they going to push back the Preakness now? I mean, poor Preakness. They're just like, who cares? But this is about keeping these horses, right, stout and healthy and ready to breed.
Yes, if you're Sierra Leone right now, your goal, you're not going to win the Triple Crown. Your goal now is you need to win the Belmont Stakes, the third leg of the Triple Crown, because now you can say, look, we lost the Derby by a nose. We won the Belmont Stakes, and that breeding fee goes up as well off of that. If I own Mystic Dan, I'm probably not never running him again. Right. This is it. We're putting you out to pasture. We're going to go make some money. I'm not going to run the risk of, you know, any leg injuries that, you know, for the horse, because that is a realistic, you know, thought with these horses. You see horses break down all the time. I'm just running them out to pasture, say thank you very much. And, you know, you're going to live out the rest of your life, you know, and enjoyment.
Elsewhere in the world of sports, the Vegas Golden Knights, Steve's 1A team. He's a Red Wings fan at heart, but he lives in Vegas. He's adopted the Golden Knights. One and done Stanley Cup champs after the Dallas Stars knocked them out 2-1 last night, as you predicted as recently as yesterday afternoon when I texted you. Sure enough, the Knights go down 2-1. Let's start with thoughts on just the game, Steve. You were expecting them, and I can never tell with you how much of it is you think they're going to lose, or you're just so used to being disappointed in the sports world, but you were expecting them to lose.
It's a little bit of both, but the Stars are the better team. You saw that. I got my hopes up when the Knights won the first two in Dallas. Here it is. You know, now they can just win, you know, at home. They can close this series out. But as you watch game three, game four in Vegas, it was clear the Stars were the better team. You know, Eichel had a shot at an open net there, missed it. You know, the Knights had their chances, but for me, I felt that they were playing much more on defense. The Stars were attacking. I thought the Stars were the better team in that game. And, you know, from a sports fan perspective, I'm glad the Stars won. Just a little disappointed that Vegas Knights didn't advance farther into the playoffs.
All right, so we got this email about specifically last night's game, RED@radradio.com, from Andrew. Says, I got a sports question for Steve. Game 7, second period, the 11th minute, there was a tripping foul called on the Stars goalie. After replay, there was no tripping. The goalie pushed the Vegas player. The announcer said it was not a foul. My question is, doesn't the NHL have coaches' challenges like the other major sports?
They do, and one of the things I really like about the NHL coaches' challenges, if you are wrong and they don't overturn it or whatever you are challenging, it goes to a power play for the other team. So not only do you lose it, but it goes to a power play for the other team. So you really have to ensure that you will win that, because you don't want to give up a goal because you had a coach's challenge that lost. So that's why you see, you know, in the NHL, they're a little bit more hesitant to challenge calls like this. And my understanding is there's no limit to the challenges. You can challenge anytime you want, but understand every time you lose, it will be a power play for the other team.
See, that's tough, because we've seen now this experiment in the NFL for over a decade, and we've seen so many times where a coach challenges, the announcers, all of us at home, are saying the exact opposite of what they ultimately determine. And everybody's seeing it with their eyes, but somehow the officials, the guys in New York in that example, they all see it the opposite way, and you start to question if you've got a penalty. Like, I don't know what the football equivalent is. Does the other team get to kick a 45-yard field goal attempt or something like that if you're wrong? I don't know. But either way, that would change. And I'm not sure I want fewer challenges in the NFL, but that's an interesting dynamic.
I love that dynamic. Huh. Unlimited challenges. You want it, go get it. But, you know, maybe in football, the other team gets a first down, or you lose a down, or I mean, who knows what. Baseball, maybe the batter goes to first base, or I mean, just something. Look, you can challenge as often as you want, but there has to be a penalty that makes you hesitant, that you really need to make sure that you are correct if you're going to throw that challenge out there.
So back to the Vegas Golden Knights. Hanifin and Hurdle are signed long term, but their list of unrestricted free agents is lengthy, and the buzz is that the Vegas Golden Knights management, who have been brilliant, as you like to point out, the way they twist and turn themselves around the rules involving caps and signings, they've got a lot of work to do in the offseason. So they're defending champs still. They got into the playoffs. Now they're out. How do you see it being on ground zero where the Knights are moving forward?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And every year we hit this off season, and my wife, who watches every Golden Knights game, I mean, she watches them all the time. It's her favorite sport, which before the Golden Knights, she hated hockey. She wouldn't watch it on TV, but we took her to a couple of games. She saw it live, and, you know, being in Vegas, just fell in love with the game. And every year, you know, because you're going to see players that you want to see on the team and they're going to go away as they've fallen farther down, you know, like William Karlsson or, you know, someone like that, that you've really cheered for the last several years. You know, maybe Marcia Salt goes away. I don't know, but they got to make some changes. You can't that, you know, salary cap money and every year you can't continue to compete, pay the players and expect to keep the nucleus together.
But you're not envisioning, take your negativity out of it, right? You're not envisioning the Knights are going to fall off the map, no. Right? No.
No, not at all. It's just you may lose a couple of, you know, like when Reeves went away, you know, people didn't like that. When Fleury, you know, that was the big thing with DeBoer when he came in. Fleury was still the most popular player in Vegas. You know, he went away. And it's just losing those players that you really relate to. And the team's got to move on and in a different direction.
When you took your wife to the Vegas Golden Knights game, was that the first time she'd seen hockey live?
No, she had seen hockey live in Arizona and stuff when she was younger, but there's nothing like seeing a game in Las Vegas. I mean, there's really not the energy in that building. Every seat's a great seat. And, you know, her complaint was, is on TV, it's just boring and she couldn't fully follow it. But now that she's been to games live and fully understands it, she watches every single game they play.
I was wondering, because you and I have said over and over again, hockey's the best live of all of them. If you're just saying, what's the one event I'm going to go to, I'm going to take someone to get them into sports, it's hockey. It's just so much better live, and it's so great live. Speaking of, the Dallas Knights, or no, I wish, the Dallas Stars, rather, head to the second round to face the Colorado Avalanche. They've got home ice. Do you have the Stars? I know we've talked about this over and over again, Steve. Are the Stars the prohibitive favorite? Is everybody, you know, a lot of people on TV, oh, it's either the Stars or the Knights. Those are the Golden Knights. Those are the two best teams in each other going to win. It seems to me like you have a lot more hope for the East.
No, the favorites right now, you have the Panthers out of the East, and you have the Oilers, because the Oilers are facing the Canucks, and I don't think anybody really thinks the Canucks can win this series, even though they have home ice. Where the Stars, the Avalanche are a really good team. So they're going to have to beat the Avalanche in order to advance to the next round. So right now you are looking at, depending on the book, either the Panthers or the Oilers as the Stanley Cup favorites.
So speaking of the Panthers, tonight, just one NHL game. The Boston Bruins are at the Florida Panthers as they kick off that series.
Yeah, right now the Panthers are $1.60 favorite in this. Bruins, great season, but Florida's just a really solid team playing good hockey right now. We saw it the second half of the season and into the playoffs. I'm hoping it's a really good series, but I like the Panthers as well to win this.
You've had Florida go all the way for quite some time now.
Yes.
All right, we got an email about how we could change the NFL. That's always fun when we were talking about challenges. We'll get to basketball, baseball, and NFL after this.
Knicks picks. The Mix Picks Sports Show. Let's
go! As promised, we got an email here, rad@radar.com, that came in from Michael, as we were talking about in the NHL. Endless challenges, but if you lose a challenge, the other team gets a power play. So we were talking, like, that's a lot different than the NFL, where they not only put a number on it, the penalty, is the penalty really fit the crime, if you will, the crime of, you know, not getting the replay right. Michael says, if a coach loses a challenge in the NFL, you lose a timeout, literally, that's it. I like your idea of the other team kicking a 45-yard field goal. Well, I just threw that out. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if that's the answer. I like, you know, Steve says, do they lose it down or whatever? You bring up the NFL and changing rules. Everybody will start emailing and calling in and going, right, because it is America's sport. But I would like to see something that's more penalizing than just, as he said, you lose a timeout. And isn't it, if you get two wrong, you lose something else, right? Don't you lose a timeout somewhere along the way? I don't know. But it's not enough.
Yeah, and you take the NBA, if you win your challenge, you still lose your timeout, which, you know, penalizes you for even challenging the play.
We got an email here, rad@radar.com, from, I don't know, is it El Demo? I'm not sure of how to pronounce it. You were talking about tonight's hockey game, I think it was. Yeah, that's the only game you gave odds on so far. Panthers are favored, and the question is, when Steve says $1.60 or $1.60 bet, does that mean if I bet a dollar, I would win 60 cents on the favorite? And how much if the non-favorite wins?
No, it falls into, any time you look at a sports board, the minus is the favorite, and that's how much you put up to win $1. So if you're minus 160 in this case, you have to put up $1.60 to win $1, 16 to win 10, 160 to win 100. Keep in mind, you get your bet back with all bets that you make. So if you put up 160 to win 100, when you cash that ticket, you'll get back 260. You're 160 plus you won 100. The underdog is the plus money, and that's how much you get for every dollar you bet. So in this case, they're plus $1.45. So if you bet a dollar on the Bruins and they win, you get back $1.45 plus your dollar, you know, 10 to win 14.50, 100 to win 145.
By the way, I wish we had time, because this would be a great time to segue to somebody who has written in. We will get to it, I promise. It's in my pile of when we have time, and we will have time. Sports slows down. Who wants to talk to Steve about some of the weirdest, worst out there bets, et cetera. So we'll get to that, I promise, because it would be a great time to do it. But we said the initials NFL out loud. There's really only one quote-unquote big, I don't know how big it is, story that a lot of people are talking about. Sometime this week, we think the schedule is going to be released. I haven't seen the NFL confirm that yet, but it should be this week if they stick with history. So we're trying to fill space, we being the sports media. And the news is that J.J. Watt confirmed over the weekend he's keeping the door open to a possible NFL return if the Texans, quote, need him. He retired after 22, obviously. He told D'Amico Ryans, and they played together on what I think was the 2011 Texans team. He says he told him last year, quote, don't call unless you absolutely need it. But if you ever do call, I'll be there. He says this is it. Last year he's going to train the way he's always been training. Steve, I'm in the front office of Houston. I'm probably calling D'Amico in going, dude, you know, this could really help. I don't know if they need attendance help after last year, but, you know, we can sell merchandise. It's JJ, et cetera. The NFL might even be calling the Texans. But on the field, X's and O's, is there anything about this that would be a good idea for the Texans?
Yes, if it's late in the season, depending on how their injuries pile up, and if they feel they have a legitimate team that can go deep into the playoffs. If you're not going to make the playoffs, don't bother. You don't want to activate this clause with him early in the season, because you need to make sure if your team's any good, and you want him healthy and at full strength to wreak havoc come playoff time. So that's something that if you really feel that you are a team that can possibly go to the Super Bowl, I'm probably making that phone call in the beginning of December, saying, hey, look, we want to activate you somewhere around week 15, something like that, so you can get a few games under your belt. And I got to believe that J.J. Watt can still do enough in a short span to help this team if they are a good enough team to make a deep playoff run.
I mean, I would think that, I mean, he says he's already training. He's maintaining his training for one more year. I would think even at this point in May, and I don't know when he had this conversation with Coach Ryans, but you would think somebody would reach out to him, even if it's under the radar, and say, look, at least do what you said you were going to do. Stay in shape, because, you know, and then insert your scenario. If Houston, if we're either about to clinch or we know we're going to clinch, we want to bring you in, say, December, mid-December, whatever. That'll be your training period. So we won't play a lot, but you'll be training all year. Then you'll get some game time and you're ready to go for the playoffs. I would think that message would already be delivered. There's no downside to this that I see.
I would have already had this conversation. Yeah. So he would be very aware of it. And again, if it's that, look, I'll let you know in November if we feel we can make a deep playoff run. And I'm not saying just make the playoffs. I'm saying you got to like win your first game or two to make this worthwhile, because you're also pulling J.J. Watt out of his other job. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to be messing and taking advantage of him. You have to look at him, you know, in what he's doing for his career right now also. But man, that would be fun to see.
Plus, if you tell him in early November, he can stop training. He can gorge on all of the holiday food. Let's jump back to basketball now. So everybody's wondering about LeBron and LA, and of course they fired Darwin Ham. And so that brings up the idea of who will coach Darvin Ham. Sorry, who will coach the Lakers? Names are being batted around, and one of them that was mentioned was Jason Kidd, who immediately today has signed an extension with the Dallas Mavericks, because when you float these names, right away the franchises will go to the teams if they have them. I heard the same thing about, is it the Clippers? We're trying to protect Lou. I don't know if they wrap that up. But good move for the Mavericks and or Kidd himself to sign this and stay away from L.A.?
Yeah, if I was a kid, I wouldn't even be looking at that. For me, LeBron James should be coaching the Lakers. I mean, he's the only person who could coach the Lakers that he wouldn't, you know, want to throw under the bus if they don't go deep or win a championship. So let LeBron do it. Tell him who he wants to coach and let him to go negotiate that contract.
Yeah, it's an ode to last night's Tom Brady roast on Netflix, where Belichick made a point of Tom Brady owns a soccer team and they're no good. And Belichick, his timing was perfect. He paused and he said, it's not so easy running an actual team, is it? And he got a roaring ovation because he was making the point of, you know, this is fun. Was it Brady or was it me kind of thing? It's a little bit with, do we have different jobs sort of thing. And it's kind of the same thing with LeBron. I'm with you. Go full Pete Rose here. Make him a player coach. Just let him coach because he thinks it's so easy. Don't even let him pick a coach. Just let him coach and let's just see how he can do.
And you know, I was reading an article and looking at, you know, all the coaches that LeBron has gotten fired and, you know, Spoelstra with Miami, who I think is one of the best coaches in the NBA. And the story is LeBron and them went to Riley and said, you got to fire him. He's not the right coach. He doesn't have the experience. He's not very good. And Riley is like, no, Spoelstra is the coach here. End of story. That's it. Spoelstra is still the coach with Miami. They're still a really good team. So just because LeBron didn't win and chooses to blame the coaches every time, you know, maybe he's going to look deep inside.
And by the way, that story, A, reinforces how much I love Pat Riley. I've always loved and respected the guy. And B, he's one of the few guys in the NBA then and now who can look LeBron in the eye and say that, and LeBron's got nothing to say back.
Yes, and I love that fact. But Pat Riley's earned it. Yeah. I mean, he has done everything in the NBA, and everywhere he's been, he is a winner.
I had the Orlando-Cleveland game on. I can't say that I sat and watched the whole thing, but as I watched, Cleveland just really – it wasn't really a game ever. Their defense was insane as they move on. I mean, it took 7 games to take care of Orlando, but anything stand out there? And do you give them a shot as they go into Boston tomorrow?
I don't really – they need Jared Allen back. Yeah. The Cavs, they're really not the same team without him. The Magic, really young team. They're fun to watch. Mm-hmm. They need to get some guard play. If they can get a couple of really good guards on that team that can shoot from outside, this Magic team could be a lot of fun to watch for years to come. I don't really give the Cavs any shot at winning this series. I mean, I think the series price is Celtics minus $20. So that means you got to put up $20 to win a dollar. So it shows that no one's giving the Cavs a shot here.
Jeez. All right, we got 2 games tonight. The early game's at 4:30 Pacific time on TNT. It's game 1. The Pacers are at the Knicks. Boy, the New York media, Steve, you can see the drool out of their mouth now. They are ready for the Knicks to go all the way on this one.
Only to probably be heartbroken yet again. Not in this series, though. I like the Knicks against the Pacers here. Right now in game 1, Knicks are a 5-point favorite. Haliburton is, you know, hurting right now. He is listed as questionable in this game. Pacers, I keep saying this, a lot of fun to watch. They just don't have any defense. And right now, Jalen Brunson is just lighting it up. I think he's gone like 35, 40 points the last 4 games plus. He's unstoppable. And if you already play bad defense, then I just don't see how the Pacers are going to slow him down in any way. But, you know, Siakam is one of my favorite players to watch play in the league for the Pacers. I really enjoy his game. He's one of those that's willing to do the dirty work in addition to being able to score. It'll be an entertaining series, but I think the Knicks win this in 5.
All right, the late game at 7 o'clock on TNT is a couple things here. You've got the Nuggets going. Gary and Danny, who joined the show now and then, they both have whoever gets there from the West wins in the finals. But cliche number 418 out of the sports world, the series doesn't start till a road team wins. Well, Minnesota's already up 1 game to none. They're at Denver tonight. How you feeling about everything?
Right now, the Nuggets are a 6-point favorite. This game was sitting at 5.5, just went 6 in the last like 5 minutes or so. I'm swaying on this game. I'll be honest with you. I'm not falling off that Nuggets bandwagon, but I think the Wolves match up great with the Nuggets. They're able to put 3 guys on Jokic, you know, with Towns and Gobert. and Naz Reid coming in off the bench, who won the sixth man. And Anthony Edwards has stepped up to become one of the elite players in the game. And then you add in Jamal Murray has a calf injury. He's listed as questionable in this game. I do believe he's going to play. But if the Nuggets aren't at full strength and the Wolves are able to take Jokic out of the game because they can throw three different big guys on him and try to just wear him down, I'm starting to lean towards edge to the Wolves.
I mentioned Gary by name. For those of you that are regular listeners, he's actually going to join us a few times this week. First time will be tomorrow. So we'll add in a third voice to the Mix Picks Sports Show tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We're back after this.
Mix Picks, the Mix Picks Sports Show.
Let's go!
All right, let's get to Major League Baseball, Steve. Cleveland Guardians, they're 22-12. They've got a 2.5 lead game in the Central. They've also got a guy named Stephen Kwan hitting leadoff. Oh, who, by the way, is also batting .353, a league-leading 47 hits, 28 runs, 74 straight appearances without a strikeout. By the way, that .353 is leading the AL in batting. He underwent an MRI after leaving Saturday's game, running down a fly ball, and he is now on the injured list for 10 days. He's got a hamstring strain. Okay, a couple questions. The Guardians, are they, how for real are they? And is this a early in the season big deal or not really? These things happen.
They're a good team. They've had really good pitching. They're getting some hitting here. I think they're finally embracing, you know, a couple of teams now with that, look, put the ball in play. Don't just sit back and only want guys who can hit a home runs, because I think we've watched over the last several years that if you are built solely to hit home runs and that's your offensive, you know, strength, that you're not going to advance and win the World Series. You got to be able to put the ball in play and limit your strikeouts. Kwan getting injured, yes, but this is just part of the season. I mean, you play 162 games. To expect someone to go through it without getting injured, which really just shows how remarkable Cal Ripken Jr.'s streak was, that he played all those games in a row, you know, without getting tired or, you know, jamming a thumb or anything like that, you know, is just a credit to Cal Ripken and also how the game has changed so much.
So, you know, I haven't done this in a while. And as you're saying that, I'm trying to Google, because it's always funny when you look up the longest active games played streak in Major League Baseball, because Ripken was ungodly 2026-32, right? So the longest game is 686. Is that right? I'm trying to see. Either way, it's like that. You agree, right? That's a record that'll never be broken.
It'll never get broken. I'd be surprised if. I mean, you're saying 686.
Trying
I would have guessed something more like 185 or 200.
Yeah, and I the last I heard, I thought it was around 300 or something, and I just shook my head. I can't confirm on the fly if it's actually. Oh, see, now Joe Sewell, he played, that's in the 30s, blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to just do it on the fly here. I don't think there's even somebody, I don't believe the 600 game thing, just for the record. But that's one just to check on. Okay, look, I get it. They're in LA, and they're the Dodgers. We're always going to hear about the Dodgers thing. I just don't know how much of it's like real news or hype news. Okay, Ohtani was big in the news over the weekend for a couple reasons. There was this fun back and forth with Dave Roberts' manager, because Dave Roberts holds the all-time Dodger team record for home runs hit by a Japanese-born player because he was born on the Air Force Base, or the military base in Okinawa, I think it was. And so this has been this ongoing joke. His record is 7. He hit 7 home runs for the Dodgers in his career. So Ohtani, there was this fun back and forth where they had talked to Dave Roberts, and he said, you know, it'd be nice when he broke my record to give me a car, because Ohtani paid off whoever had his number with a car when he came over to the Dodgers. And so he gave Roberts a toy car. And then Ohtani eventually went out and had an amazing weekend. He hit, 3 homers over the weekend. His one yesterday in the 8th was 464 feet. He's tied for the major league lead in home runs. The Dodgers they've got a 5.5 game lead. They're 10 games over 500. Okay. I mean, the Dodgers aren't really a story until they're not up by 5 or more games, or until they win the World Series. As far as I see, the stuff and I go, yeah, okay, that's what they should do.
This is Ohtani public relations entirely to build back his image, to show why he is the face of Major League Baseball. to sweep everything that we've been talking about over the last several months under the rug. And I didn't forward you the last story on this with the Resorts World executive and where that part has gone. And I'm telling you, every time I read an article on this, I believe he is guiltier and guiltier. And, you know, this whole article is based to show that Ohtani had nothing to do with it, et cetera, et cetera. But then as they go through and they explain, you know, the case against the other guy, you're like, okay, that's not right. That's not right. That's not right. And I get it. You know, you don't want your star to go down. But these are the things to try to get back goodwill with the public. And I think you'll see more and more of it with Ohtani until this fully does go away.
The thing that's extraordinary about it, because I see the stories, they're not getting picked up by anyone unless they're getting picked up in a way to further the whitewashing of the story. I understand. Look, all of this is a business. I get it. I'm not a little kid. I know. Even sports journalism, even journalism in America is a business. So I understand why ESPN is happy to throw up the headlines that more evidence shows Ohtani knew nothing about that. Oh, he was duped. I'm still curious why non-sports entities that aren't in any way tied to Fox or ESPN or any of the networks that have any role in this, why they don't see it as something worth reporting. They all want to bring down these big leagues, but no one is picking up on. You're right. If you take the time and read, like, it doesn't take that long, 10, 15 minutes. You really dive into it. You're left with so many questions that lead you back to, Ohtani had to know.
I agree with you entirely, and it's questions I ask. I mean, how is there no one even willing to, you know, do a deep dive investigation into this? And really, let's just find out the truth. Let's just look at everything and find out what it is and report it. But it just, you know, this is where I fall into that. Our media, to me, just doesn't care anymore. And I get it's a big business, but it seems like the truth no longer matters in certain situations.
The Giants have lost three straight. They're at the Phillies again today. It's a local time late afternoon game. You can catch it at 1:05. Is this just a matter, Steve? Because we talked about the Giants last week, and they're kind of right where we said they were the right where they needed to be. Now they've lost three in a row. To me, it feels like, from what I saw and read, this is just an indicative nature of the Giants are kind of overmatched by the Phillies at this point in the season.
Phillies are playing great baseball. I mean, they're hitting. They have arguably one of the best pitching staffs, if not the best pitching staff in the major leagues. The Giants just haven't been consistent. You know, they haven't been able to go out and get hot. Let's go win 5, 6, 7 in a row. It'll happen. I'm starting to get a little bit worried on the Giants that they're not going to quite be the team I was hoping they would be going into this. The Dodgers are starting to pull away. Walker Buehler is going today. So we're going to see, you know, if the Dodgers can get that pitching healthy again. You know, but the Dodgers are going to win 100 games. They're going to win the division by double digits. But if you're the Giants, you just need to hang in there and be that dark horse team that nobody looks at because they're all looking at the Dodgers, but they have to play consistent baseball, and they just haven't been to this point.
That's right. I forgot tonight was the Buehler game. By the way, that game is on ESPN Plus. The Dodger game is tonight. So your Red Sox, they finally broke the Twins winning streak. They let it get to 12. And then they broke it yesterday, 9-2 over the Twins. Boston heads to Atlanta tomorrow. We talked about them because they're on that list with the A's, who we'll get to, as being surprisingly better than everybody thought. The Red Sox still in third place, 4.5 back. Okay, the Twins have leapt up to 2.5 back, tied with the Royals in terms of games back, a little ahead in percentage points in the Central. Now, the Twins have to host the Mariners, the first place Mariners. I don't know if I buy the Mariners or not, but do you, first of all, do you buy in the Mariners?
I think they have really strong pitching, and as long as their pitching can stay healthy, they will remain in the race through the season.
So the Twins, I mean, my God, that 12-game winning streak. This is why I say when it's this early in baseball, and I constantly annoy people by saying it's too early. The Twins went from what? I mean, weren't they in last place for a few days, and now they're right back in it? That's what a 12-game winning streak can do for you. So same question. Do you buy the Twins?
No. In fact, I would sit here and tell you that I kind of like the Mariners in this series. I wouldn't be surprised if the Mariners win the first couple. you know, one of the things when you watch when a baseball team goes on a long run, a long winning streak, normally when they do lose, they lose the next several games in this case, especially when they're not an elite team. If the Yankees, the Dodgers do this, you don't expect it. But, you know, the Twins were 7-13 when they went on this run. 12-game winning streak to only be five games above 500 means they're really a 500 team or worse. I like Seattle here. I'm hoping they can take it to the Twins.
All right, so I mentioned the A's. The A's got 2 of 3 from the Marlins over the weekend. On Friday, we were talking about all the possibilities. Could the A's, A, get to 500 at least? And they were only 2.5 back. And could we get some cannibalization at the top? I mean, a pipe dream. Could the A's even move into a first place tie or only a half game back as it stands? After all of that, they're still 2.5 games back, but they're only a game under 500. This is a team that we would have put at the beginning of the season with the White Sox and the Rockies. Not surprised that they would, after 34 games, have 8 wins, which those two teams do. So now the the real test, I think, begins tonight, Steve. They got to play the world champs. The Rangers are they're coming to Oakland. And I think we get to see a little bit of what the A's are or aren't.
First of all, give them credit. They got to 500. You know, they did lose their last game to, you know, but they got to 17-17. My next goal for them is to get above 500. Big series. Texas isn't playing, you know, they've won 2 straight, but they're not playing great baseball here. I'd love to see the A's take it to the Rangers and find a way to get above 500. Again, enjoy this story while you can. Mm-hmm. The A's are not going to be there. I don't care what they do right now. They're not going to be there at the end of the season.
It would be great, though, just to piggyback on what you're saying, Steve, if the A's not only got to 500, but got over 500, got into – I mean, they're 2.5 back. They're technically in the mix again. It's early May. It's ridiculous. But if they can do it against the world champs, there are going to be more people across the country at least doing exactly what you're talking about, taking advantage of this limited window opportunity. Again, I'm an A's fan. I know the reality. Doesn't matter if the A's are in first place by 10 games at the All-Star break. They're trading everybody away. But – this is an opportunity to really exploit this story if they go out and they beat – because it's a two-pronged story, right? The world champs, you're right. They're not having a great season. They're fine. They've won 2. They're right there in the mix of it. But they get beat by the A's, like 3 out of 4. Imagine something like that. Oh, and hey, by the way, what about those A's?
Yeah, so there's several different ways I'd look at this. If you're Texas now and you go and lose 2 out of 3, that upper management can't be happy. But what are the owners of the Rockies – and the White Sox saying, we know we're not good, but we know we were a better team than the A's. And the A's are going out playing competitive baseball, sitting right around 500. And we're playing 230 baseball. You got to believe that if I'm the manager or I'm the general manager, I'm on the hot seat on whether or not I'm even going to be able to keep my job. Mm-hmm. To get through this, because both those teams are playing 235 baseball, and they have more talent than the A's, and they're not even competing at any level. So those are the things I like looking at.
All right, it's fun at least. We got 23 hours, Steve. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
Thank you.
Better than most. How about him? That is better than most.
Vermont has a 59-55 lead.
Touchdown, Tyson! There are no flags on the field! It's a miracle! Tennessee has pulled a miracle!
The Mixed Picks Sports Show.